Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
That was a phenomenal Diana Ross, Upside Down. And our other co-host, Chris, just popped on board. I first want to thank all my listeners, north to south and east to west, who tune in. I can't find my list, so if I forget some of y'all. Please charge it to my head, not to my heart. I want to thank all my listeners in the United States, Canada, the UK, UK, Singapore, Senegal, Nigeria, Cameroon, Africa, Indonesia, France, Iraq, Russia, Germany, the islands, just so many. But I'm hearing some interference, and I'll be muting out people's mics, so I'll make sure that, you know, I can pinpoint it. But we have a special guest tonight, and his name is Mark Gober, and we're going to talk about an end to upside-down thinking. But before I go any further, I want to say hello to my co-hosts, Mark and Chris. How are you?
Hi, Jerry.
Hello. Sorry about that.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, Mark. Hi, Chris.
So, okay.
Hello.
So without any further ado, I want to welcome my special guest on, is Mark Gober. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, certainly, certainly. You know, it's amazing how you say into upside down thinking. So we want to jump right in on that and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So my book, it's called, like you said, it's called An End to Upside Down Thinking. And the subtitle of the book is a bit more descriptive. It's Dispelling the Myth that the Brain Produces Consciousness and the Implications for Everyday Life. And when I tell people about my book, they typically ask, well, are you a scientist? Are you a philosopher? What's your background? And people are surprised to hear that I'm actually not a scientist or a philosopher. I work in business and finance. So I'm currently in Silicon Valley. I'm a partner at a firm called Sherpa Technology Group. We advise technology companies on their business strategy and innovations. Prior to Sherpa, I was an investment banking analyst with UBS in New York, and I was actually there during the financial crisis from 2008 to 2010. And prior to that, I was in the whole. I was right there in New York during the big crisis, and that was an interesting learning experience for me for sure.
Wow. You know, I'm going to get off task a little bit, and I just want to say my prayers are going out to everybody there in California. First, the ones that lost those college students in that shootout, because this is ridiculous. And then the fires that's going on, it's just every time you turn around, some negative stuff. And my other co-host, he's also in California, so I know y'all feeling it worse than everybody else feeling because y'all close, you know. So on that note, I just want to say my prayer is going out to the families, the people there who are disgusted by what's going on, you know, and I just want to say that.
Well, thank
you
for saying that. And, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it actually dovetails into a lot of the topics in my book, even though it's about the brain and consciousness. I think a lot of the issues that we see in the world today are actually very much related to the topics in my book, and I'll give a basic overview of that. I think the conventional view of our own consciousness, like right now all of us on the phone and your listeners, we all have an awareness. Like we all have a mind. It's there. The big question in science is we don't even know how that mind comes out of our brain. All we know is that our brain, it has a bunch of complex stuff happening in it, but we don't know how our own mind or our own consciousness is generated. And what I explore in the book is the evidence which suggests that our brain is not producing our consciousness in the first place. And instead that the brain is acting, and that the brain is acting like an antenna or like a filter of a consciousness that's not confined to or produced by our body. So we can talk about the evidence for that, which is my whole book, but I want to get to the comments you just made, because a lot of the issues that we see in the world today, I think, are stemming from this belief about consciousness, that it's coming from the brain, that we all have a separate identity. And what I think the science is pointing towards is actually that we're interconnected at the level of our own consciousness in ways that our eyes don't show us, but which science is starting to uncover. And that has big implications for how we treat one another and how we view other people. So to me, we're getting to the very end of the implications here, but it's important. I think the implications of the topic we're going to talk about today, I think it's the ultimate solution to the problems we see around the world, which stem from a belief that we're all separate people.
Okay, now you got my attention right away. When you said that we believe we're all separate people, well, okay, I'm not you, you're not me. What's wrong with thinking that way?
Well, so I think a lot of the problems in the world today are stemmed from a belief in pure separation. Like when we look at each other, there's an appearance that like my mind is separate from your mind, and we look like we're separate because that's the way our perceptual systems show us things. But mm-hmm. what the evidence seems to suggest is that at the level of our own consciousness, there's a connectivity that's happening. And that suggests that we're actually not as separate and not as different as it appears with our eyes. And if we accepted some of the new science that's coming about, which points to this interconnectivity, I think a lot of the violence we see and trouble between people we see might not
right.
make sense anymore.
Exactly. Now, I heard my other co-host, Chris, saying hello. Is there a problem, Chris?
Oh. Hello.
Yes, I hear you. Chris? Okay, well, it seems like, you know, there's some issues. Well, Mark, I'm going to throw the question to you. You got a question for all guests?
Yeah, of course. You know, I suggested that song, Upside Down, that Terry play it at the beginning, Mark, because, you know, once your message starts resonating in the scientific world, you know, this whole everything in it will be turned upside down. Hence the title of your book. When you began your career in investment banking in 2008, and when the literal shit hit the fan on Wall Street, how did being in the frying pan of that scene make you decide to come out west and change your whole path into consciousness raising or dispelling? How did that propel you to change course?
Mm-hmm. So it actually is a great question. It actually didn't come out of investment banking. So like it didn't directly come out of it. Maybe these were things that contributed to my asking big questions, but it wasn't until 2 years ago that I first got into these topics. And I've been in Silicon Valley for 7 years, and I was in Boston with my current company before that. So I've been in the business world thinking in a very traditional way for a long time. And it was 2 years ago that I became exposed to these ideas, originally through podcasts. And that led me to looking at the science itself and to see if there's any science to point towards this idea that our consciousness is something beyond our bodies. And there was a lot of science that I never had heard of. And I went to Princeton University where I studied psychology, and I'd never heard of any of these things that were related to psychology. So I got very interested, ended up researching for a year just because I wanted to understand things better, not ever planning to write a book. And then I ended up writing the book very quickly in a few weekends in July of 2017 because I realized the implications and thought that this message needed to get out there from somebody who wasn't in the scientific community and hopefully in a way that the general public could understand. So this has been a very recent process. And maybe back to your original question, maybe the fact that I've seen things like the financial crisis up close and personal and saw a lot of the problems that were happening between people, not just in the financial markets, it's propelled me to think that there's a real urgency here to get the message out about the science and the implications for all of us.
Wow. That's smart. You did say that your philosophy is known as materialism. It's that no matter. It's known as matter. Why would you say that your philosophy of materialism is because you have it's known as matter? Everything is matter, you know. I'm just confused about that introduction about modern society's thinking.
Yeah. So this is the what I'm calling upside down thinking in the title of the book. Is in scientific circles, there's a name for it. It's called materialism. And I'll just give the basic description of what materialism is, because it sounds like a fancy scientific word, but basically all it says the following. The universe started 13.8 billion years ago with a big event. We call it the Big Bang, and it filled the universe with physical matter, right? So that all of a sudden we have a lot of matter in this big universe, and by matter I mean physical stuff. So when I look at my table, it's made of atoms. These are physical. So we have a universe with a lot of matter, and when you have this big universe, you're bound to end up with interactions between those pieces of matter in this big universe. We call that chemistry. And when you have enough chemical reactions between all this matter that's in this big universe, chance tells us that you will end up with a molecule that can replicate itself, and that's like DNA. So we started with matter, we ended up with DNA, and DNA led to the evolution of a human being, which developed a brain, and from our brain, consciousness comes out. That is the picture that most of our society and most of our science is operating on. It says we started with matter and we ended up with consciousness through a brain. Now, what I didn't realize is that there are big questions about the last part of that, of how a brain could ever produce a consciousness. And we could just do a quick exercise to illustrate the issue here. And I'll just tell you quickly, Science Magazine has called this the number two question that remains in all of science. And this is the question. If I ask you if you have your hands free to touch your leg, easy to do, right? If I ask you to touch your arm, you can touch your arm. That's really easy. If I ask you to touch your mind or touch your awareness, touch your consciousness, you can't do it. It's not physical. So this is the question. How is it that your body, which is physical, you can touch it? How does it produce this mind that you can't touch?
Right.
Science doesn't know. We don't know how it happens. So the question is, does the brain produce it and we just haven't figured out how yet, or does the brain not produce it at all and the brain is just like an antenna? And ultimately what the science that I cover discusses, consciousness doesn't come at the end of the picture. So we started with matter, we ended up with consciousness. That's the materialist perspective, the mainstream view. Matter creates consciousness. What I'm arguing, and a number of others think this as well, is that we have to put consciousness first before matter. So that means that all this physical stuff is within consciousness, and the consciousness is not dependent on anything physical. It's not even dependent on our bodies. So that has, like, this is major stuff if that's a real thing, where that means if our body dies, our consciousness doesn't die because our body was never dependent on the consciousness. And this is the kind of science that my book goes through.
Wow, I like that. Well, really quick, I'm going to let Chris ask his question, and then we'll get back to Mark.
Okay, hello, Mark. My name is Chris Michael Ward. Now, it seems to me from what I understood, because I was, you know, I apologize for being late to the show, and then my phone was acting up, is that what you're saying, it kind of goes with science and not only the show of the Big Bang Theory, but the real Big Bang Theory. Is that right?
I mentioned the Big Bang Theory to talk about the conventional view of science, which is that we started with a material universe, that matter came first. However, whether it was a Big Bang or some event, at the basis of the universe, if we can break things down, we'll get some physical matter. And what I'm arguing is that when we break things down, consciousness is even more basic than matter.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
I agree, because in my way of thinking, God's consciousness created the universe, but, you know, that's up for speculation by different people. Mark, are we going to see if you can get through right now? Because I keep hearing interference when I open your mic. So, Mark, this is your opportunity.
Yeah. Mark, how have your near-death experiences figured into the core message of your book?
That's a great question, and one of the chapters in my book, and I'll just quickly give a high-level picture, is that the way my book is structured is to look at a number of individual separate phenomena that all point to this idea that consciousness is the basis of everything and that consciousness is not local to the body. One example out of many in my book is the near-death experience, and it's a really important one. And let me start by explaining what a near-death experience is. And if you had asked me about a near-death experience 2+ years ago, I would have said, well, I don't really know much about it, but I, I, I've heard that a near-death experience is just a hallucination that the brain creates before someone is about to die. And when I got into the actual science of it, what appears to be the case is that that's not actually true. So when people have a severe injury, for example, or they are in cardiac arrest, like their heart has stopped and there's no blood flowing to their brain, sometimes a percentage of the people who have that experience or have some other kind of major physical trauma where they're nearing death, they experience a highly lucid consciousness where they are experiencing things in the room, like they see things accurately that happened in the room while they're under this distress. They talk about seeing a light. They have an unconditional love feeling. They have a life review where they experience their whole life in a flash, and they're like judging themselves for how they acted in the past. And sometimes they actually experience past events through the eyes of the people that they affected. So if, let's say, Bob is in cardiac arrest, he has his life review, and he was really mean to Jane at some point during his life. During the life review, he might re-experience that event through Jane's eyes, and he's judging himself for how he made her feel. And then he comes back into his body, and usually people's lives are changed in a big way. So what does all this mean? Is it the brain that's creating this experience that I described, that many people across the ages have talked about? Or, alternatively, is this a real experience that's just happening when the brain is fully off and the consciousness is kind of free of the body, and this is an actual experience that's not a hallucination?
Wow.
So I'll give you quickly some science on this to back up these ideas, because that's what's really gotten my attention, is that there are credible people like Dr. Pim Van Lommel, who's a cardiologist, who has run these studies on people who are in cardiac arrest, where he basically has a setup where he talks to people after they're resuscitated. And the conventional view of the brain would say that nobody in cardiac arrest should be having such a lucid experience like a near-death experience. So we would expect, under the conventional view, that 0% of people in cardiac arrest would have this experience. But what he reported in a very credible journal called The Lancet is that 18% experience the near-death experience in cardiac arrest. And that's a remarkable finding.
It is. So we will have to take a little small break right now, and we'll be back because I got some more questions about an end to upside down thinking. Because they say I'm a strange bird, so I don't know. Maybe I've been thinking upside down for a lot of years. I don't know where that has gotten me. So stay with us. We'll be back with Mark Gober. We'll be back in 2 and 2. And for some reason, we just haven't. So many issues tonight, you know, songs not playing. I don't get it. So, hanging it with her.
Real, unparalleled. Authorist Terry E. Lyle has written an autobiography entitled Broken. Terry talks about overcoming her personal battle with suicide, being homeless, selling and using drugs, and living the life of a swinger. She found that with prayer and her belief in God is real, that she was blessed to overcome all adversities to becoming the woman and authoress she is today. The book is $20 and can be purchased through Amazon, Kindle, createspace.com, and from her own personal website at www.terrylyle.com. It's yours today. And make sure you tune in to hear Terry on Unmasked Friday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time on blogtalkradio.com. The number 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. And remember, through God's grace and mercy, all things are possible, for he would not leave you.
Unmasked, but I want to thank all my listeners from north to south and east to west for tuning in. But I want to get back to my guest. I want to take a little bit that was said about your book, An End to Upside Down Thinking. And you said that this compelling book marshals the clear evidence and makes the case that consciousness is the force that precedes matter. And all of the scientific and popular thinking that the brain matter creates consciousness. So science dismisses any evidence to its contrary position that it can't prove the matter produces conscious argument to nothing more than unfounded belief and faith, just another form of religion. So are you saying that what we, our consciousness and everything, are you saying that you believe that it's about religion and not about Irwin's theory of evolution? So you, are you saying that you believe that it's founded on faith and something that we can't really understand?
So I think the summary you're reading there is really with regard to the conventional perspective in science, which is that the brain produces consciousness. And one of the things that I show early in my book, In Into Upside Down Thinking, is that we really don't know if the brain produces consciousness, number one, and we could never even prove that the matter came before consciousness, because if we imagine that there was a universe that happened to exist before any form of consciousness, we could never prove that it was there, because that means there was no consciousness to prove that it was there. So that what I'm trying to draw out there is that many people in the scientific community currently are saying that we need to have factual bases in our belief systems. We need to have facts and science to prove all of the things that we're looking at, which I agree that that's important. But the problem is that the very basis of modern science is taking a faith-based position, which is saying, well, I just think that there was a matter that came before our consciousness, but we could never even prove that. So the comparison I draw is actually one that Albert Einstein said, and he acknowledged that this was an issue. He thought, well, I think that there that this materialist perspective that matter came first, he thought that was true, but he said, I cannot prove that my conception is right, but that is my religion. And that's the comparison I'm drawing, is that the modern science is its own form of religion, of kind of belief that matter came before our consciousness, and it's not actually something that we can prove. Did that make sense?
In a way, but to me, it just proves that God is real. I mean, you know, because it's nothing that we knew until we was created from the dirt. It's nothing that we could conceive, but there's no way in the universe that things are just going to swirl around and just become what we see in life, you know. Y'all can have a little spin on it, but there's no way that I can see trees doing what they do, things being so eloquent, the sky being the color it's supposed to be, human beings are higher than animals. You know, it just goes to show that somebody had to do it. So, you know, whether I can give you proof that God exists, when I say my proof is just look around. You see it for yourself. I see Mark got his hand up. I'm going to let him chime in, then I'll get to Chris real quick. Mark, it's on you, darling.
Yeah, Mark. Yeah, as a pragmatical scientist yourself, have you had any spiritual or religious upbringing at all? Or has science always been your religion?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I would say science.
You
no, you just mean science in general, right? Not Scientology.
Oh, okay.
No. No, not there.
Okay, yeah, that's what Terry was asking. No, for me, science was what I used to judge reality. And I guess what I was saying in my response to Terry earlier is that what I show in the book is that science itself has its own features that are similar to what scientists criticize about religion. And that's the irony, is that science has to take leaps of faith to prove things that it can't prove. And at the same time, science is criticizing faith for making those same leaps. And I just draw I make clear that there's an irony present, which I didn't realize was there when I had my prior thoughts about the universe.
Well, that's a good point, huh, Mark?
Yeah, it did very much. How has it changed your feeling about your own mortality, Mark?
Massively. So I thought under the conventional perspective in science is that our consciousness comes from our brain. So if you take that a step backwards, well, what happens when the brain's not functional or when the body dies? that means your consciousness is gone. That's the implication. So that means once you die, it's over. That means your memories are gone. Any feelings you had, they're wiped out. So under that perspective, you really cannot have meaning in life unless you want to rationalize and just make yourself feel better. Because you can't come up with meaning with that perspective, and that's what I understood. Now what we're all talking about today is this notion that consciousness is transcending the body, meaning that when the body dies, the consciousness doesn't die because it was never dependent on the body. And things like the near-death experience where we have a non-functional body and we have a lucid experience, which is suggesting that maybe our consciousness can exist without a body. And that has a big – that was for me a very big deal to think about mortality and life and death.
Wow, that's something. Well, Chris, babe, go ahead and ask your question. I'm sorry, Chris. That's my fault, darling. Go ahead, Chris. Ask your question again, babe.
All right, Mark. This is my question. I'm a big meditator. You know, meditating, and you know, when you meditate, you kind of reach into your consciousness, and you reach into your, you know, it slows your thought, and it helps you concentrate. What does that have to do with what you're talking about? Is there a connection?
Yes, absolutely. It's a great point. The way I think about meditation under this new theory is we have to think about the brain as being like an antenna receiver. It's like receiving consciousness in the same way that your television set. It has a little antenna, and when you're watching the show on your screen, it's because it's picking up a signal. This is a very broad metaphor, but I think it just helps. So if we think of our brain as being like this antenna that's picking up our consciousness, when we are thinking too much, when we have a lot of emotions going on, it's kind of like the antenna is being clouded. And the signal that we're picking up is not as clear because we have all this junk that is getting in the way, for lack of a better term. So when we think about things like meditation or hypnosis or things that get the mind into a calmer state, maybe those are instances where we're getting a clearer signal of consciousness without all of the fuzz. Yeah. So that, you know, when people are in this meditative state, maybe there's less anxiety or there's more creativity that people report when they're in meditation.
Yeah. Okay, well, I have a question, and I don't want to offend, but it's my job to sit there and ask the questions that are controversial. And the theory of this book and what you wrote about, okay, am I to assume that this probably came about because maybe you was meditating, doing yogurt, drinking wine, smoking a joint? I mean, where did you come with from? Because back in the day when I smoked weed, man, I was so philosophical, man. I knew all kinds of stuff, and I was so mad that I never wrote that stuff down when I wasn't high anymore. So what got you to write this book? And, you know, what was you doing before? I just say, well, I'm going to write this into upside down thinking.
Terry, so many people have asked me that same question, phrased in different ways. I honestly get asked that all the time, like, what was happening to you, Mark? And actually, I didn't have any of those. None of those things happened. For me, it was a scientific journey where I was really – initially, I heard people talk about it on podcasts where they had their own personal experiences, and I was interested in it because a lot of my book also talks about psychic abilities, like telepathic abilities. And these things are possible if our brains are like antennas, right? All of a sudden, it's like our consciousness is going back and forth because the consciousness is the basis of everything. So I heard people talking about psychic abilities. I heard people talking about communicating with people who are deceased. These were things that made no sense to me, but that led me to look at research. And what I didn't know and what I realized many intelligent people in the world don't know is that there's a lot of science from the U.S. government, from Princeton University, from University of Virginia, some really credible places. And then I got hooked on it because I was like, oh, my goodness, this is like the next scientific revolution in thinking. So I had to then research a lot so I could understand it for myself. And then much later, after researching for a year, it was then when I decided to write the book, and I wrote it very quickly in a few weekends.
No, that's awesome. Well, I'm going to let Mark ask his question, then I got a question for you, too. I'm going to let him ask his question first. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Mark. Since the publication of your book, how has that impacted the scientific community and the world at large? Are you still getting the word out?
I would say still getting the word out. The book has been out for just a month, Today's November 9th, so it's literally been out for 1 month.
Oh, okay.
And I think
okay.
So it's pretty early, and the ideas I'm talking about are so contrary to how many people think that I think it takes time to absorb it. I mean, just from my own personal journey, it wasn't like overnight everything switched. It was a lot of research. So I think it might take time for people to absorb it, but I am starting to get emails from people that I don't know who have told me that the book is just shifting their perspective on life and that they think it's going to have a big impact, and they're telling all their friends. So that makes me feel good in that it seems like it's helping people already.
That's great. Well, Chris, it's your time to ask your question, baby, because you know I get long when I ask my questions.
All right. Well, Mark Goober, tell everybody who's listening, where did was this passion of your? I mean, I shouldn't say passion, but this topic has this always been part of your life?
Not the topic of consciousness per se, but I've always asked big questions about what are we doing here? Does life have meaning at all? Why should I care about things? Like, where does that come from? Is there something bigger than me, or is it just the body that randomly showed up because of chemical reactions in the universe? So I have always asked questions like this. And even back in college, I was at Princeton University, and I wanted to major in astrophysics to answer some of these big questions about the universe. And they have a really good department there, so I thought about majoring in it. But I was on the tennis team at Princeton, and I was later the captain of the team. It's a very demanding Division I program, so I couldn't have done astrophysics and tennis at the same time. So I kind of brushed those interests aside. Then I went into investment banking and was working around the clock, and I've had a professional business career, so I haven't had the time always to explore these things scientifically. And it wasn't until 2 years ago that I kind of got jump-started on this other path once I learned of things through podcasts and then looked at the science.
Wow.
Did your research, baby. Well, it makes me think, you know, now you say you're a partner in a business that you own. Okay, what do you do in your business? And does any of the stuff that you're talking about into upside down thinking, does it help you in the growth of your company?
You know, they're pretty separate. The company that I'm a partner of, called Sherpa Technology Group, we advise businesses on their strategy as it relates to their technologies and their innovations. So it's very much a business. It's not related to consciousness unless, you know, we do work with some companies that have artificial intelligence technologies or technologies of trying to mimic the brain using technology. So there are things that are somewhat related, but I'd say it's pretty separate. And this is just kind of a personal passion. And going back to our comments at the very beginning of the show, I think what the topics point towards is the notion that we're all connected as part of this consciousness, even though we appear to be separate. And that idea that we're connected, and I'll go back to the near-death experience that I mentioned earlier, where when people are having this life review, I mean, it's an amazing thing that their body's basically dead, and they're having a life review. They're experiencing their life in a flash, and sometimes they're able to switch into the perspective of the people that they affected, as if we're all part of one consciousness, but we're able to switch and view it through a different lens somehow during that experience. It's all suggesting that what really matters in this dimension, or whatever you want to call this physical world, what seems to matter is how we're treating each other. And that is something that I think is maybe too much absent from the way society is thinking. And maybe if we appreciated some of this new science, we would understand that we're more connected and that we would want to treat each other much better than we are on the whole.
Okay, one quick question before we go to break. You heard of the show Big Bang Theory, correct?
I have heard of it. I have not watched it.
Okay, well, if your friends have told you about the characters, would you say he was Leonard, Sheldon, Raj? I mean, who would you be? Because it sounds like you're about being a scientist, period, you know, because of the difference that you're into.
Yeah.
I think you're more of a scientist than a writer.
Yeah, I'm not familiar enough with the characters to be able to tell you which one I most like. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. I'm going to call you Sheldon because he's the one who knows a whole lot. His friends get lost. But anyway, we got to take a small break. We'll be back at 2:02. Stay with us.
Eventually, the truth will come out of the darkness for everyone to see.
Hello? Hey, it's Mike. Hey, how y'all doing? How y'all doing? Oh, yeah, everything's good. Everything's good. It's just been really good. Sorry I haven't been here this week. Yeah. Oh, I forgot, but I will be there this week. Right now.
There are times in your life when your faith will be challenged.
Hey man, I want to share something with you. I accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. He's been really wonderful to me. Don't you agree?
I feel like I'm my own God. The things that's been happening to me, I feel like I've been making those things happen.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you don't believe in God?
Well, I haven't seen him.
The truth can come in shocking form.
Nobody up in my house when I'm at work all day, going day.
No! No! Who is this? Why is he in my house? Who are you, man?
Is this your mom?
Who are you? Mother, this is my woman and this is my house!
Oh, my girlfriend.
Why is he in this house? What do you mean you didn't know?
When the secret is no longer hidden, you have now been exposed. Written by authoress Terry E. Lyle. Check out her website and on Blog Talk Radio every Friday at 7:30 p.m.
I just wanna be a good man to you, girl. That's all I wanna be. Hey, that's all I wanna be, baby. That's all I wanna be, baby. So I just wanna be a good man to you, girl. That's all I wanna be, baby. That's all I wanna be, baby. That's all I wanna be, baby. So I just wanna pick your phone up. With Obama talking business, see you calling, tell him, hold up, we gotta take this, let the world wait. Wanna wear it like a medal, tell him that I'm a spoken for fellow. The ladies say hello like I'm who they wanna be with. I do everything with my left, I know you see it. Tripling, listen baby, I ain't nowhere near perfect, but I promise to make it all worth it. Giving you the things to be the man you deserve it. Making sure you're smiling, way more than you're hurting. Taking my time to hear you when you're talking. Reminding you how bad you are often. Keep them legs shaking, making love and making sure you understand that it's in my plan. So I just wanna be a good man, to you, girl, that's all I wanna be. That's all I wanna be. Trust me beyond a shadow of a doubt. So when them bras run up on you with my name and name out, you tell them you can be gone with all that. Cause you know what we got is beyond all that. You know we got that real thing. Gonna be the object of some hating. Hey, but we gonna be alright, we gonna be alright. making love after every fight. Girl, from the day I put that ring up on your hand, in front of friends and fam, I had a plan, and my plan is to be a good man, good man. Girl, that's all I wanna be. That's all I wanna be, baby. That's all I wanna be. Said I want to be a good man, good man. Girl, that's all I want, my baby. Said it's all I wanna be, baby. All I wanna be. Oh, 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 la 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 la.
Good Man by Neo, and props go out to all these good men out there, wherever you are, props to you, baby. And Mark got a question before we get some closing information from our guest. So, Mark, go ahead and ask your question, and then we'll let our guest, let everyone know how to reach him and how to get his book, how much it costs, yada, 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 and then we'll take it on home.
Okay. Yeah, Mark, I was scrolling your Twitter feed, and you were talking about why we shouldn't fear artificial intelligence. Can you just give that little synopsis for us?
Sure. And I think there's a lot of talk about artificial intelligence, and there's a show called Westworld that a lot of people, that's become very popular, where basically machines, they become so complex that all of a sudden they become conscious and they start to have memories, and then they want to take over, and they have their own feelings, and they start to rebel against people. So there is this implied idea in that show, and I think in society in general, which is that if we can make a machine complex enough, eventually it will start to have feelings and it will start to have memories and consciousness. Now, going back to our discussion and what I discuss in my book, the whole premise of my book is that matter, physical stuff like artificial intelligence, is not creating a new consciousness, but rather it's the other way around, that consciousness is more basic than matter. So I think a lot of the fears about artificial intelligence, they might be thinking about things in the wrong way, where we're concerned that the machines will become conscious and start to have feelings, but maybe what we should be focused on instead is we need to be careful how we program these computers, because if we program a computer to do things that are not good for other people, which we could do, that's dangerous. But the machine itself is really going to be at the whim of how it's programmed rather than being conscious on its own. So I guess what we're doing is that we need to worry about artificial intelligence to the extent that those who are programming the machines, that we need to program them responsibly. However, I don't think we should be worried that the machine itself will become conscious on its own.
Wow, but you made a point, though, is kind of like scary, that if we do that, and like you said, the people who are programming, a lot of people want to put their self in these machines because that's their little ego tripping and stuff, and these robots, I believe can self-generate and think fast, because right now, you see it right now, like, these things are talking and stuff and doing stuff, and they can kind of, like, figure out what's next, And it might get to the point where they might think that we are the problem, and they might have an uprising, and turn against us, I don't think it's that far from that, but I hope not. Lord knows, because it's going to be hard to kill a robot. But on that note...
Terry, the point I'm trying to make is that I don't think the machines will become complex enough to have feelings, to want something, because that requires a consciousness. And what I'm saying is that I don't think the machines will develop a consciousness, because the consciousness doesn't come from a physical machine in the first place.
Okay, I get you. Well, Mark, tell everybody about the cost of your book, where they can find you, and you also know that once you've been on the show, you can always come back. But let everybody know how to reach you, and congratulations on your book being out a month now. Way to go.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show. It's been fun. My website is one good way to find out more information, and it's my name, Mark Gober, MarkGober.com. And you can find out more information there on my book, which again is called An End to Upside Down Thinking. It's also available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and many bookstores. And the cost of the book is, it's in hardcover, it's on Audible, it's also on Kindle, and the cost of the hardcover is $19.95, but typically on Amazon and other sites, they have discounts there too.
Sounds good, sounds good. How do I get an autographed copy?
You have to send me your address, Terry.
I can do that. I can do that. I can do that, darling. Sounds good.
All righty.
Well, you know, Mark, like I said, you're always welcome to come back. You got something new you want to discuss, maybe about your job and your employees, who ain't doing what or what it took to become a partner in such a thriving business. But you're always welcome to come back. And my co-host, Chris and Mark, will you say goodnight to our guests before we sign out here?
Good night, and thanks for coming on.
All right.
Yes.
Thanks, Chris and Mark and Terry.
Always, always. So we're going to take you home for little Staple Singers. Let's do it again.
Yeah.